Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Campfire Tales, Sir Latte, chilling like a villain. How are you doing? How was your night? What do you got planned after this? Anything, or are you just going to sleep with us? Anyways, we have a terrifying story about this night shift security guard. He takes on this job and, well, let's just say, probably wasn't the best idea. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Share me with your friends and spread me like butter. Have a good night. My name is Ben, and in case something happens, I need to write down what I saw, or at least what I think I saw. Whether you believe me or not is up to you. I know what I'm about to describe might sound crazy. I would have said it was impossible just a while ago. I know I should have just walked away when I saw the red flags. I should have just listened to my gut. Sometimes, a job is not worth it, regardless of the pay. Now I fear whatever I saw last night could be looking for me this very moment. I should have left the first time I heard the bells. I started 2 weeks ago. I lost my job and was looking for work. It had already been 2 months at that point since the factory closed, and for the first time in years, I was unemployed. When I was looking for places that were hiring online, I noticed I had received a strange email. It was a work advertisement. Now hiring security personnel for night shift at Aurora Ridge Cemetery. Call for more details. No previous security experience required. I was glad to see a potential job prospect had come to me. I never thought to look for security jobs, and definitely not at a place like a cemetery. I decided to call the number listed. The line rang for a minute until someone answered. It was a man with an odd reflection in his voice, like an accent slightly out of time. He was polite, though, and sounded genuinely happy someone had contacted him about the offer.
Oh, thank you for the call. My name is Mr. Penny. I am so glad you are interested in working with us at Aurora Ridge. I would like to arrange a short meeting and introductory tour if you are still interested in the job.
I was thrilled and eagerly responded. Yes, thank you, Mr. Penny. I would love to. When can we meet?
Well, tonight at 9:30 should work for me, if that works for you.
I paused for a moment, surprised that it would be an interview that same night he had inquired, and so late in the evening. I did not second guess it, though. I agreed, and Mr. Penny sounded delighted, almost like I was doing him a favor.
Oh, fantastic. Looking forward to seeing you here. Always happy to work with a new soul. Take care and see you then.
He hung up, and despite how odd the arrangement was, I was happy I might have a paycheck again. I set out at 9 p.m., leaving a little bit of time for me to get there early, since Aurora Ridge was only about a 10-minute drive from my apartment based on the directions. The place seemed to be nestled out of the way, off the main road leading into town. When I first arrived, I had to double-check that I was at the right place. I kept driving a little further on the dirt road and practically into the forest. When I came upon the main gate, I was relieved. A tall iron fence crossed the clearing, and I saw the sign by the main gate and knew I was there. It read, "Welcome to Aurora Ridge Cemetery, where the light of lives rest eternal." The gate was closed, and when I stepped out of my car, I was dismayed when I saw it was locked as well. I guess I would just have to wait until Mr. Penny was there to let me in. I waited for a while, and when I checked my phone, it was 9:40 p.m. I was getting worried that I'd been tricked and that no one would show up. As I nervously glanced around the area, the light faded further and twilight glowed in the distance. Something about it was odd that made me do a double take. I thought I saw a strange light in the sky. It looked like it was coming from somewhere on the grounds, but further inside the cemetery. The strange thing was that the light was not in any shade of twilight I had ever seen. It was a sort of green, like one that you might see at the northern lights. It stood out amongst the other colors, and the more I stared at the shifting pattern in the sky, the more unnatural the green light seemed to be. It lingered when the other colors faded away into the darkness at night, like it had a strange photofluorescence. The odd viewing of the lights was interrupted when I heard a car approaching, and I looked and saw a large hearse driving down the road. It pulled up slowly, and I could hear the pained grinding of the ancient vehicle, and it lurched to a halt. A man stepped out of the hearse. He wore a jet black suit and was very tall, but rail thin. Oddly, he also wore a pair of sunglasses that looked glarely out of place in the dark night. He straightened his jacket and slid a hand back over his thin gray hair. He smiled when he saw me and walked over with a distinct, almost theatrical stride. He reached the gate and unlocked it, and he sauntered towards me as the gate yawned open.
"Hello, Ben, was it? Pleased to meet you. I trust you found the place all right."
I shook his outstretched hand, and he gripped me disturbingly tightly. He kept smiling and shaking until I let go and responded,
"Yes, thank you, sir. Though I was afraid you may not be coming."
Mr. Penny looked apologetic.
"Yes, I know. So sorry for the inconvenience. I had to make a last-minute pickup, and I was delayed. Though I should give more care to the living. After all, the dead can wait."
He chuckled at his own words, like an inside joke. He laughed it off and shrugged.
"Well then, shall we?"
He ushered me forward, and we stepped in together. Mr. Penny had insisted we walk, promising that the site was not far. Though as we moved, I was struck by just how empty the place seemed to be. Only about a dozen gravestones laid scattered throughout the cemetery. As if reading my mind, Mr. Penny spoke as we walked.
"You might notice the scarcity of the graves here. Though our business is new, the lot is ancient. We have more residents than it appears, but age and degradation and a rather distressing incident have destroyed many of the plots and stones. We still keep the grounds, but leave the other resting places unmarked and undisturbed."
I thought I saw that odd green light in the distance again before Mr. Penny pointed to a small building we were moving past.
"That is the groundskeeper's building. Old Horace tends the grounds in the day. You might see him on your way out on some nights, but he does not normally stay after dark."
I nodded my head, and we moved up the gentle hill towards a larger building in the distance. The green glow was gone, and I started to wonder if I had really seen it at all. Mr. Penny spoke up again and pointed to the building.
"Here we are. Please follow me if you could. The station is here, and we will discuss the job further. But the site that really matters is just a short way further up the hill. We will go to that and more, assuming you agree to take the position."
He smiled awkwardly, and I was confused by the comment. I thought I was guarding the entire cemetery. What was this other site? The security station came into clearer view as we moved closer, and I saw it had a strange, almost tower-like lookout that jutted out of the roof, giving it the impression of a lighthouse looking out over a vast ocean of the buried dead. We walked up to the door, and he fumbled with a large ring of keys. He glanced at me apologetically as he tried a few to no effect. Finally, The door opened on rusty hinges, and he held out a hand to invite me in. We walked inside, and I saw it resembled a sparse cabin. Barely any furniture, besides a table, chair, and a small footlocker. It was not what I expected. I thought there might at least be a monitor and some security cameras. Near the corner, I saw the only other door, and a ladder that must lead to that odd lookout tower. The door closed behind us, and I focused my attention back on Mr. Penny.
"Well then, please take a chair. Don't worry, I'll stand, seeing as how there is no abundance of chairs."
He chuckled half-heartedly, and I smiled slightly to not disappoint his attempted humor.
"Here at Aurora Ridge, we value hard work and integrity. But we need to know we can trust you to do your best and not let base fears get in the way of your contributions. So I must ask, are you afraid of the dead and their resting places?"
I was taken off guard by the question, but I guessed it must be some sort of an interview he was doing first, so I answered honestly. "No, I'm not afraid of the dead or cemeteries, sir." He smiled at my answer.
"Good, very good. Do you believe in ghosts or spirits?"
I replied, "No." Once again, Mr. Penny nodded his head and continued.
"Good. You see, many employees have left this job in the past. It's not for the faint of heart. I know it seems straightforward, just guarding the grounds at night. But alone in the dark?"
He paused while he fixing a stare on me and adjusting his sunglasses, but not taking them off.
"Well, people forget themselves and start to see things. The mind gets tired. Fantastical stories start becoming believable, and even skeptics can start to believe absurd things. So I assure you, if you follow the rules and do not give in to crazy musings, you will do well."
His smile was back, and I was wondering how many people had this job before.
"Speaking of doing well, we pay well for this position. The stress it puts on the mind can be harrowing, and we'd like to offer our night guardsmen something akin to hazard pay. Therefore, we are willing to offer a salary of $3,000 a week."
My jaw almost hit the floor when I heard how much it paid. I had no idea what sort of security paid that much, but I was stunned by the answer.
"I see I have your attention. Good. I will take that as a yes then."
I was already nodding my head eagerly before I even had gotten into the particulars of the job.
"Good, very good."
He smiled and held out his hand. I shook it without even thinking to ask why the pay was so significant and why he had called it hazard pay.
"Well then, please, if you would, follow me. We have a special place to visit, and I need you to listen closely. The instructions are paramount to your success."
I nodded my head and opened a note app on my phone. Mr. Penny led the way on a small path, lit only by the dim light of a small row of solar stake lamps. We ascended the hill, and the path led into what looked like a thicket. Mr. Penny walked on, unbothered, and gestured me to follow. The small drape of plant life brushed away easily, and a somewhat concealed glen rested beyond. The area was hauntingly beautiful. Flowers grew around the soft green grass. The fireflies danced around a small tree near the center. The pretty ambience distracted from the other key factors in this tiny clearing. Near the center of the glen were four evenly spaced gravestones. They were fairly large but not imposing,
and each one had a small string hanging above them, connected to tiny bells. I thought it was odd. Grave bells were not used anymore, since modern medical science had long since determined a way to verify if someone was truly deceased. Beyond the four graves was a small but intricately detailed mausoleum. The sight of all the scenery was jarring. I took another step towards the surreal resting place. Suddenly, Mr. Penny grabbed my shoulder, holding me back momentarily. He was looking at me as if appraising my reaction.
Beautiful, isn't it? An oasis of calm, separate from the drudgery of life. Your first and most important job is keeping this place safe. I know you have many questions, but I am going to explain the most important expectations regarding security here at Aurora Ridge. Failure to complete with them will result in consequences. Understood?
I nodded my head at this sudden change of tone.
Good, very good. I will be sure to remind you of that commitment. In fact, your predecessor had to be terminated for failing to follow protocol, so if you wish to remain, you will listen carefully.
He sounded serious, and I nodded my head and listened to the instructions.
Your work hours will be 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. You are not to leave until 6 a.m. unless expressly authorized. Breaks can be taken within reason, but you may not want to leave the grounds during breaks. You must stay at your post. Lunches must be brought in with you. No delivery services, of course. Bathroom breaks are, of course, permitted, but time should be strictly monitored. Sound systems should continue to be verified even during restroom breaks to ensure fast response should something happen. You are not to disturb the grounds directly, not going past or disturbing this line, especially not going near the graves.
I looked at where he was pointing, and it was a small white line that seemed to stretch on to the left and right. My foot had almost crossed it, and I realized that is why Mr. Penny had stopped me. At first, it looked like it was drawn on like a football field, but I noticed when I looked closer, it seemed to be made of salt. Mr. Penny waited until I looked back up at him and continued.
Absolutely no trespassers. We are closed at night. Any and all trespassers must be detained and dealt with. There is a channel on the radio that you must call if intruders are detected. Channel 6. Your job is observation. Other security personnel will detain them prior to removal by law enforcement. Understood?
I nodded my head again and he moved on.
Sometimes external influences can disrupt the lines of demarcation. If this occurs, please reply to the security salt to ensure the rings stay whole at all times. This last rule is crucial. You must abide. Are you paying attention?
He asked sharply. I nodded my head and confirmed.
If the graveyard bell rings, even if it's just one, you are to press the SOS button on your radio to signal the event. Then you must evacuate immediately. You will have exactly 3 minutes to make your way up the hill and to the mausoleum outside the ring. Then you are to use this key to enter the mausoleum, close the door, and wait until morning, no earlier than 6 a.m. Do you understand?
It was the strangest request so far. I had no idea why the bells would ring, unless someone was buried alive. I couldn't help but ask after that one. But sir, why would they...
Mr. Penny cut me off. They almost never do, but strange things can happen here. Even if you think it's just the wind, it's better to be safe than sorry. Go to the mausoleum, lock up and stay put.
any interaction with the bells after they ring, even waiting to watch what happens after the first 3 minutes will be a problem. Nothing will happen to you if you follow the rules. Understood? I was concerned and very skeptical, but I was more desperate to have a paycheck again. I figured I would follow whatever superstitious rules I was given if it meant not being broke anymore. I nodded my head and agreed. Yes. Mr. Penny beamed at my response.
Excellent. Well then, if that's all settled, I will show you to the tower. We have a watchtower there to keep a safe eye on the place while keeping a respectful distance. There are night vision binoculars, a directional microphone, and a radio there, along with spare batteries for the lot back at the security building. The station also has a small restroom which we have stored some extra salt in as well, should you need to reapply it. He led me back to the building and I stepped inside. I saw the small footlocker that he had mentioned and the devices were in.
When I turned back and saw Mr. Penny was not coming inside, he did an about-face and smiled.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention. I need you to start tonight. I hope that's all right.
I was surprised, but I felt like I couldn't say no without jeopardizing the opportunity, so I reluctantly agreed. Yes, of course.
Fantastic! I knew I was right about you. Take care and keep your eyes peeled and ears open. Have a good night, my friend.
He closed the door, and just like that, I was alone at my new job, watching over a small gravesite for an absurd salary and following a bizarre list of rules. I looked around again briefly and realized I should probably head up to the small tower and take a look from my vantage. It sounded like I was going to spend most of my nights there. I opened the footlocker near the ladder and removed a surprisingly nice and expensive-looking pair of night vision binoculars. I switched it on, and the battery charge was full. There was also a small directional microphone, which had a wireless headset it connected to. I also grabbed the handheld radio and switched it on. I stowed the items and climbed the ladder to the lonesome tower. I saw a folding chair set aside in the lookout and was grateful that I was not expected to stand there for hours on end. Though I regretted not bringing something to help pass the time, I had not expected to work that night, but with the knowledge of the payday I had in store, a few boring hours watching some graves was nothing. I grabbed the small chair, unfolded it, and set it up so I would be facing towards the hill I had to watch. When I sat down, I saw that I had a good view of the surrounding acres of grounds. It was all positioned just right to see directly into the little glen that housed my charge. While looking closer with the binoculars, I noticed something odd. None of the four special gravestones had any names or any markings on them. They were all blank. I found it strange, but once again, I did not question my fortune in guarding them. After an hour and a half, my eyes started to get tired constantly looking out at the site. The perimeter ring was undisturbed. Nothing was moving about. Barely even a breeze to disturb the dead silence of it all. I switched over to the directional microphone and pointed it at the site to confirm. As I had expected, there was nothing at first. Then I thought I heard a low groaning, creaking sound. It was odd, but not too concerning. After a while, I started hearing another sound, like a persistent scratching and tapping. It continued for an hour and a half, and I was about to go investigate. Then, it suddenly stopped, just as I was about to go back down.
I managed to make it through the rest of the night with no further issues. Almost the entire week was uneventful, but on Friday, something happened. I had a routine prepared for the long haul, including snacks and entertainment to pass the time while staying focused on my objective. I couldn't listen to anything since I had to keep an ear out for the bells on the microphone, but I was able to steal a few moments of time to read a book. I wanted to use my phone, but reception was bad, so it was a non-starter. I made it through almost the entire night and was so engrossed by the book that I was reading that I didn't pick up on the sounds coming through the mic at first. It took me a second to realize I was hearing voices coming from the tree line. I propped the mic up so I could still hear and grabbed the binoculars. I looked out at the graves and did not see anything at first. Then I saw a rustling in the foliage near the mausoleum and three figures emerged. I had to do something. They were heading for the site. I heard the voices speaking clearer as I trained the mic directly on them. How did we even get this far, Aaron? And what are the lights you're talking about? It's too dark to see anything out here. The first voice spoke, sounding like a young man. Another responded to the question curtly. I know what I saw, Jess. There was just a weird green light. It was coming from here. It didn't look natural.
Guys, we shouldn't be here. This place, there's something not right about it.
Another voice spoke up, meek and concerned. They were right about one thing. They shouldn't be there. I had to figure out what to do. I remembered the instructions and switched on the radio to Channel 6. This is Ben in the tower. There are three trespassers by the site, going down now to investigate. There was no response, so I just moved on, grabbing my flashlight and rushing downstairs. I sprinted towards the glen and made it through just in time to see the three strangers stepping over and disrupting the salt line. They all looked fairly young, two girls and a boy, probably in their teens. I shouted out a warning.
Stop! This is private property!
Two of them held up their hands, even though it was only a flashlight I was holding. The third looked at me with a mixture of confusion and fascination.
What is this place?
The girl had asked, sounding like she was speaking while in a dream. The other two looked scared and confused. I spoke again, slightly softer than before.
This is private property and a graveyard. Satisfied? Now, clear off. You are not supposed to be here.
I tried to sound commanding, but not overly hostile. Her two friends shrunk back, clearly not wanting to get in trouble, but she stepped forward and asked me a surprising question.
I came for the light. Did you see it too? There was something in it. It called me here.
I shined my flashlight on her, and her expression looked oddly distant. The mention of the light was weird. I remembered the green light I had seen the first day. Maybe this group had seen it too. I felt guilty for detaining them, but knew I had to get them to leave. I lowered my hands and tried to get them to listen.
I'm not sure what light you think called to you, but you all need to get back home. It is late, and you all look like high schoolers. Your parents must be worried. Do you live close?
The girl in the middle, Erin, as I had heard her friends call her, offered an odd response.
I don't know. I can't remember.
She sounded scared suddenly. The other two looked at her and then at each other. I shined the light on them again and saw their eyes were glassy. I thought they may have taken some psychedelics or something, since they didn't seem to be all there.
Then when I looked closer, I saw a hint of unnatural green light reflecting off their eyes. The effect was eerie, and I decided to lead them out of there. I hoped they had a number I could call and have their parents pick them up. I explained my plan to them, and they agreed.
Yeah, let's go. I think it was a mistake coming here. Something's wrong with this place. I don't think it...
The boys said, as if waking up from a dream. The girls nodded and suddenly looked more lucid than they had when they arrived. I was relieved and started ushering them out. But before I could show the way back, I was startled when I heard a loudspeaker demanding that the group...
Freeze!
It was two large men in riot-style security gear. I did not know why they were there, but then I remembered the radio call. I tried to explain the situation, but the two men brushed past me and seized the two teenagers roughly. I tried to protest, but one of them knocked me down in the pursuit and I fell hard. Erin had tried to get away, even while her friends had been seized, but as she reached the tree line, a third figure grabbed her. It was Mr. Penny. The teens protested and struggled, and I did not like the force that the others were using to detain them. Before I could voice my concern, Mr. Penny spoke.
Very good, Ben. Nice work. Looks like we got here before they could do any damage. We will escort them off the premises after some community service.
I replied, trying to see if I could help. Thank you, sir. Though they didn't seem like they came here to cause trouble. Maybe we could just let them go without involving the police? Mr. Penny chuckled, then responded.
Oh, they should be so lucky. No, we will let them go after they resalt the circle. Then we will put them back where they belong. But you must not concern yourself, since we are here and will be repairing the damage. You are free to go for the last few hours. Go home and get some sleep. I will handle it from here.
I did not like the situation. I looked at the teens as they were not shouting or protesting. They just seemed to be staring at the graves, like they were in a trance. I thought I saw a weird light emerging from the ground for a split second before it was gone. Then I saw the two men in riot gear holding large bags of salt. It looked like one of them was moving tools, and I thought I saw a shovel in his hands. My heartbeat quickened, and I was getting nervous about what was happening. But as I was about to protest about going home, Mr. Penny stood up and walked over to me. He put an arm on my shoulder and turned me around to face him directly. I saw he was holding his sunglasses in his hand, and I realized it was the first time I had seen him take them off.
Don't worry too hard. Just go home. Now.
I remembered looking up and facing him. After that, I don't remember what I saw. The next thing I knew, it was 6:15 a.m. I was asleep in my car, parked just outside my apartment. I had no recollection of how I got back. Somehow I had left, driven home, and fell asleep in my car in those last 2 hours. Something was seriously wrong, but I had no way of explaining just what it was. I'd wanted to talk to Mr. Penny about the strange experience, but he was absent for most of the next week. I grew more nervous about what had happened, but I kept going back. I did not like it, but felt like I had no choice. That weekend, I had another strange experience. Someone was knocking on my apartment door that Saturday night. When I answered it, I saw a large bald man standing there. He stared at me for a moment before doing anything, then pulled out a small manila folder and handed it to me.
I was confused, but when I looked, I saw it had 3,000 in cash stuffed inside. The large man spoke in a dull, monotone voice.
Aurora Ridge thanks you for your work. Have a good evening.
The man reached out into his coat and pulled out a pair of sunglasses that looked a lot like Mr. Penny's. And just as he was about to place them on his head, I swear I saw a glint of green that did not look natural. He turned and walked away. When I returned on Monday night, I found that I had a visitor. It was not Mr. Penny, but an ancient-looking man who wore the dirt-speckled coveralls of the groundskeeper. He looked me up and down and scuffed as I entered. I waved to greet him and knew it must be Horace. He was holding a large bag of salt and I saw several more in the corner. He scowled and then finally spoke.
You must be Charlie's replacement. Haven't seen that big bald bastard around, but he owes me a pack of cigarettes. Though if you're here, it means old Charlie must have made a mistake. Anyways, it's windy tonight. I brought extra salt. You are going to need it. Don't let the line break. I don't want that light anywhere near the garden or anywhere else where it could get into. Don't forget, Horatioras.
He brushed past me and shot me one last hateful look before departing, slamming the rattling door as he did. I was shocked and confused about what had happened to Charlie. Then I considered the large bald man I had not seen before who delivered my pay. He sounded a lot like this Charlie, but hadn't he been fired? Either way, it did not matter. I had to get to work. I climbed the ladder up to the lookout, and after the first 30 minutes, the wind whipped up so strongly that the lines of salt began to blow away and several sections were barren. I nearly spat out my coffee and knew I had to get down there quickly. I rushed back down and grabbed one of the bags of salt Horace had left. It was heavy, and I wished I had some way of moving multiple bags, but there was no dolly or truck to do so. I hefted the bag up the hill and opened it, moving to where I had seen the broken section of the ring, and started pouring. As soon as I had finished, I saw more sections required repair. I had several more trips and was getting tired quickly. I managed to patch all the larger holes in the line, but there was one last segment that had a visible break. I had to stop and catch my breath for a moment. Then I could go get another bag and fix it. As I sat there and looked at the silent sight, I shuddered when I remembered the night where the teens had broken in. I hoped that Mr. Penny had let them go like he said he would. I did not like the way they looked at the strange light, or how I had lost the last 2 hours of my night when I tried to ask him about it. As I caught my breath, I saw something inexplainable. There was a corona of that green light emerging from the ground near the edge where the break in the line was. I saw a small opossum walk towards the light. It moved in a straight line and did not seem bothered by the fact that I was watching it. Then I saw the light seem to stretch out to beyond the ring and reach out to the small animal. The glint of green that reflected in its eyes was terrible, and I stood up and rushed back down the hill to grab another bag and complete the circle again. When I got back, the animal was gone. I could not be sure, but I thought I saw scratch marks on the ground near the ring, like something had tried digging there. I finished the ring, and mercifully the wind had died down. As I tried to understand what had just happened, I heard something that froze my heart. I heard the chiming of a bell. I looked on in horror as one of the gravestone bells was slowly ringing. It was not the wind. It was not any external force.
The bell was ringing and I had to act fast. I pressed the SOS button on the radio as I had been instructed and looked at the stone mausoleum nearby. A morbid part of me wanted to wait and see what was happening. It had to be some trick. It couldn't really be a ringing on its own. But I had no time for questions. I remembered Mr. Penny's warning and went to the mausoleum, searching for the silver key, and opened it. I took one last look outside and confirmed that the small bell was still ringing before closing the heavy door and locking it again, sealing me off from whatever was happening outside. I expected something at the 3-minute mark, but I heard nothing. There was no window, so I couldn't see anything, but I swear I saw that damnable green light glow softly from somewhere near the graves and peeking under the heavy door. I realized I still had my headset from the directional mic turned on. I had propped the mic to the chair, pointing down at the graves while I moved the salt. When I put the headphones on, I heard an odd static. I was not sure what could be making the sounds, but after waiting for almost an hour, I heard something else. It was a constant scraping, digging sound, followed by a loud crash, like someone hitting wood with metal. I held my breath, and after a long moment, I thought I heard a voice.
"No, not yet. This one needs more time. They aren't ready. Just a bit more. Put them back."
Then I heard the wooden crash again, followed by more digging. After a while, all the sounds had fallen silent. I was left cold and alone in the dark tomb, terrified, but ultimately oblivious to what had just occurred right outside. I considered asking Mr. Penny about the bells again, but I didn't know if I could trust whatever his answer might be. Whatever was going on at Aurora Ridge, it was getting more concerning by the day. I spent almost another entire week there, in tense anticipation of something terrible happening. I was getting freaked out, and despite the large payday, I was not sure it was smart to keep showing up. It was Thursday on week 3 that the reality of the situation was laid bare, and I saw the thing I could never unsee. It was a particularly cold night, and I feared the wind would whip the salt off the ring again, or worse, I would hear the bells. I was already on edge when I arrived, and when I saw the rain beginning to fall, my mood did not improve. I climbed the ladder to my lookout and struggled to hear anything over the deluge of rain. I panned around with my binoculars and saw the hideous aurora of light emerging and reflecting the water and the air like a disturbing monocolored rainbow. I wanted to look away, but the sight was captivating. I felt myself being drawn into the morbid spectacle, and I took an involuntary step forward. I managed to stop myself before I fell over the edge. Something clattered down the roof and smashed into the ground, and I realized I had dropped the directional microphone. I cursed my bad luck, but was grateful it had been that and not me that fell over. I looked over at the gravesite and saw something surprising. Despite the wind moving the salt the other day, the water from the rain did not seem to be dissolving the ring like I had expected. I was ready to bolt down and reapply it when I knew the rain was falling, but somehow it had stayed there unaffected. I tried to distract myself by reading for a while, but I was paranoid by the lack of microphone. I'd gone down to the footlocker to find another, but it was empty. There must have only been one. I tried the radio to call for help and get another, but all I got was static. Since I couldn't hear anything, I tried to be hyper-vigilant with the binoculars and look around frequently. In another few hours, I was getting tired,
but was glad the terrible night was almost over. All the coffee I had that night had forced me to take a restroom break. When I got back up the ladder, I looked out again, expecting to see nothing but rain splashing off the ground. Instead, I saw movement. To my horror, I looked again and saw three of the four bells ringing side to side. I had no idea how long they had been ringing at that point. I panicked and pressed the SOS button on the radio. Then I half climbed, half slid down the ladder, landing hard at the bottom. I sprinted up the hill, and as soon as I had entered the clearing, I saw hellish light bathing the gravestones. The green light seemed to pulse in time with the maddening chiming of the bells. I rushed to the mausoleum as the storm intensified. As I fumbled for the keys, I felt an odd sting of static that in the next instant made me involuntarily fall back. I was glad that I leapt back, since in the next instant, a jagged bolt of green lightning struck near the mausoleum and hit with such tremendous force that a large crack split the section off in front of the building. I looked up in a terrible instant and saw the storm had taken on an otherworldly quality that had made me dizzy to look at. I picked myself up, opened the door, and dove into the mausoleum, closing it behind me. As I tried to catch my breath after the insane events, I felt a chill and realized something was wrong. The structure was damaged, and I could see through the fractured facade of the mausoleum wall. I could see everything. A large group of hooded figures had appeared, gathered around the gravestone. One wore the distinct sunglasses of Mr. Penny. Others had shovels and were digging at the ground by the gravestones. Piles of dirt were dug up and cast aside as they moved deeper. I heard three shovels striking wood in unison. I looked on in numb horror as the green lightning struck the ground around where they had been digging the three of the four graves. They bent down in unison and pulled the caskets out of the graves. I was not able to see who or what was in the coffins, but something about the way they stood around them was disturbing. I heard a ringing sound in my ears and a loud voice spoke out. It was terrible and commanding, and I was shocked when I saw it was Mr. Penny, who seemed to be speaking in a voice that sounded nothing like his own.
"Bring them forward."
Two of the hooded figures brought up a limp body up towards them, and I nearly cried out when I saw the body and recognized the girl. It was Aaron, one of the teens who had broken in with their friends to see the light. She was unresponsive, but Mr. Penny reached down and touched her head. Then the two robed figures moved her body up towards him, and he took off his glasses, and I suppressed a horrified gasp as I saw the empty pits and that hide underneath. He looked like he should be blind. He had no eyes. Yet he reached out to touch the face of the young girl, and a terrible green light filled his hollow eyes and seemed to run down his hands and flow like a terrible river into Aaron's limp body. Then the eldritch green light flashed, sparked, and a dull rumble was heard, followed by a gasp of air. She was alive, but as her eyes fluttered open, I saw the same inhuman green flame in them as well. They were about to repeat the ritual when I heard mutterings and one of the robed figures asked Mr. Penny about the fourth grave. He held up a finger and then pointed in my direction at the mausoleum, and all I could hear was,
"Soon."
I huddled down, unable to look at the blasphemous scene any longer. My head started to hurt, and there was a ringing in my ears. Then I blacked out. When I woke up, it was morning.
I stole a peek outside and saw that the gravesites were just in the same position as before. Undisturbed. Even the soil looked unbothered. I started to wonder if it could all have been a terrible nightmare. I rubbed my eyes in disbelief, slowly turning around and left. I drove home in a daze, cautious but bewildered. When I got back, I tried to process what I had saw that night. I decided to look into Mr. Penny and see if I could find something out about him. When I started looking, I was horrified at my revelation. There was a V. Penny, the original owner of Aurora Ridge Cemetery, who had died 85 years ago. No known descendants, no family. I remembered the hollow eyes from that night, the green flames burning in his skull, and I shuddered. The terrible revelations continued when I saw on the news that three teens had been declared missing after failing to return home the previous week. When I saw their faces and heard the names announced, my heart sank. It was the same three from that night. All of them had been standing right in front of me a little over a week ago. The implications made me sick when I considered the graves. Three of them. Three people taken. Then the sight of one of them screaming back to life in the hands of Mr. Penny. I stayed home that night. I could not sleep, and the nervous tension made me paranoid. I started writing, and someone knocked on my door. It was nearly midnight, and I grabbed a kitchen knife on my way to investigate. I looked out the peephole and nearly gasped aloud when I saw the face of that young girl, Erin. She was just standing there, smiling. I almost reached for the door, but as I did, she spoke. "Hello, Ben. Please remember to call out if you are feeling sick in the future. Don't forget, it's payday tomorrow. We have something for you back at Aurora Ridge. Please come back. It won't take long, and you could finally find a place where you belong. Think of the light, the bell. The last one could be for you." Mr. Penny was right. I can see things now. Things I could never see before. You can too. She left at some point, and I was all alone again. That was last night. I have not left my apartment since then. They keep showing up, beckoning me back to that place where souls return to bathe in that monstrous light that claims the living and the dead. In the distance, I swear I could hear the fourth bell chiming for me, calling me to the deepest parts of the earth, to find out the secrets of the Thonic realm of dark stone and death. The sound is getting louder, but I will try to ignore it tonight. I need to finish this account. If anyone is reading this, do not trust the light. Do not listen to the things it brings back. And most of all, do not listen to Mr. Penny if he offers you something that is too good to be true.